morning, ladies and gentlemen. We've invited first class. Now we're inviting the executive platinum, emerald, sapphire, and ruby.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Crew Travel right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome back the famous Lee Harris of ATPI Travel. Welcome, Lee.
Thanks so much. I'm not so sure about the famous, let's be honest. I'm maybe spotted in a supermarket now and again from one of my kids' friends, parents, or whatever. But other than that's basically about as far as famous goes for me. I do like to fly under the radar, I've got to say.
Oh, take what you can get, right?
Don't
worry. Right back into the world of travel as usual. I don't know what it is, but this year it's a lot of strike action going on. But we do have some changes. What's going on in the world?
We do indeed, yes. So a planned strike carried out by the cabin crew of Brussels Airlines during the first weekend of December has been called off. That's after the airline's management initiated a considerable proposal. As a result, multiple unions representing the cabin crew have agreed that operations would continue as normal throughout the weekend. The unions and other concerned parties are now evaluating the proposal. A joint statement with a collective response to the bid is expected to be issued this week. A resurgence of industrial action could still occur in the near future as an agreement has not yet been reached. Unions have even considered walking out during Christmas. In further strike news, the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, that's the APFA for short, representing American Airlines flight attendants, have written to President Biden's National Mediation Board, that's seeking permission to strike after a 30-day cooling-off period. Although American Airlines Public Relations denies the risk of a holiday strike, as they would, the MAF, alongside the APFA statements, clarifies an increasing chance of a late December or early 2024 strike.
Yeah, I'm not the betting kind, but if I were, I'd be betting late December because early January is not going to have as much impact, I don't think.
Indeed, it's going to hit where it hurts. So yeah, anyone traveling over Christmas, you're going to have to tune in because my guess is there's going to be a few strikes.
And there goes my holidays over Christmas.
Yeah, no holiday for you.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate that. And thanks to American Airlines. Singapore Airlines has some news.
They do, yeah. Perth has seen a boost of capacity after Singapore Airlines announced new flight frequency changes, flight services from Singapore. With the updated frequency change, which commenced on Friday, November the 24th, the airline now provides passengers with four additional weekly frequencies. The extra flights will offer customers enhanced connectivity and greater mobility between the two countries. Before the additional frequencies commenced on November the 24th, Singapore Airlines operated three daily flights on the Perth-Singapore route. The four new weekly frequencies will operate as the SQ213 and the SQ226. The SQ213 will depart from Singapore at 7:40 in the morning and will arrive in Perth at 12:55. The return leg, the SQ226, departs Perth at 14:10 in the afternoon and arrives back in Singapore at 19:30. On March the 31st next year, the additional flights will culminate into a fourth daily flight between Singapore and Perth. Now, the additional frequencies will utilize the airline's flagship Airbus A350 with 40 business class seats and 263 economy class seats. The additional A350 offering will see Singapore Airlines offering 220,000 more seats annually between Singapore Airport and Perth International Airport. Flights to Australia are still very busy into and out of the country, so the added frequency will be a bonus for Australian crew.
I'm imagining that there's still some trying to get home after the pandemic.
You know what? There probably is somewhere.
I remember through the pandemic, nobody was getting in or out. Australia, was it Australia or New Zealand? It was like...
It was both of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Australia and New Zealand. It was just the lottery, whether you got home or not. Honestly, it was scandalous.
Yeah, there was crew that were stranded for the entire pandemic. And even though they were Australian citizens, they couldn't get home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite the controversy. But anyways, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to bring that up. Sore point, but I had to laugh. China, news out of China.
Yeah. So from December the 1st until November the 30th, 2024, citizens of France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Spain, and Malaysia entering China's business, tourism, family, and most importantly, for crew traveling transit purposes, will no longer require a visa on trips of up to 15 days. Following the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, China launched a range of strict measures limiting travel into the country. Despite being lifted back in January, China recorded just 8.4 million foreign national arrivals and departures at its borders during the first 6 months of the year. That's a sharp drop from nearly 1 billion movements recorded in 2019.
Wow.
It's a massive drop, isn't it? Hence why they're now opening up a little bit to other people.
Could be the geopolitical situation as well, but we might have talked.
I think there's a, yeah, I've got a feeling it could be.
Moving on to Venice and news that is going to make a lot of people very unhappy.
Yeah, it will do. Yeah, for the med season, for sure, for next year anyway. Venice is rolling out a tourism tax to try to stop overcrowding on peak weekends. The tourist tax was due to launch earlier this year, but was delayed over logistical issues and fears it would hit tourist revenue. The entry fee aims to reduce crowds, encourage longer visits, and improve quality of life for the residents in Venice. The rollout of the tourist tax comes after Venice narrowly escaped being placed on UNESCO's danger list earlier this year. That's because of the damage from over-tourism on its delicate ecosystem. Starting next year, visitors will have to pay a €5 fee to enter the fragile lagoon city. The charge will be in place on peak weekends and other days between April and mid-July. That's 29 days in total. The day tripper fee will be enforced during peak hours from 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m., meaning visitors who come into Venice for dinner or a concert won't have to pay. On 16th of January next year, a website will go live for which visitors can reserve the day in Venice. We don't have the website address yet, but obviously once we do, we'll let you know. Day trippers will pay the €5 and get a QR code that will then be checked at spot controls at 7 access points around the city. That also includes the main train station. Visitors with hotel reservations can enter their hotel information and also get a QR code to show. They won't have to pay, however, since the hotel bill will already include a Venice lodging fee.
Two things. For all those out there that say, we're going to go somewhere else if they're going to charge us those €5. Good. That's the point. And number two, €5. Oh, my goodness. That's like a coffee somewhere. So I always have to laugh when we have these travelers. And oddly enough, it seems to be your homeland there, Lee, but they seem to get all bent out of shape about having to pay this tiny little amount of money. And they make these threats that they're going to take their money elsewhere. It's €5. And the fact is that it's going to help those people in that area. And literally just about every place in the world has some form of tourist tax now.
They do. You tend to find it on hotels as well. If you read the small print, some of the hotel charges when you book a hotel or whatever, that will have some tourist tax built into it already. You just don't know it because it's already in there. Venice are just doing it slightly differently, whereas people who are coming in on a day trip, they're going to get charged as well. Yeah, €5 isn't a massive amount. If it helps the ecosystem in Venice, I think that's great. It'll be interesting to see the numbers who do not travel, like you say. Will it be a massive effect because it is only €5? Or will people still go anyway and it's just extra money in the revenue stream for Venice? Who knows which way I'll go if I don't. It'll be interesting to see.
Venice is an absolutely beautiful place, but I have to say, when I went there and I was expecting what in the travel brochures and magazines, and it was suffering at that time. And I guess that must have been about 20 years ago it was suffering. So the idea that you are throwing a little extra into the pot to make sure that Venice is kept as pristine and beautiful as it normally should be for the residents that live there 12 months out of a year.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I don't. Yeah. Especially, like we said, the amount's not a massive, like you say, it's a coffee. And if it's helping residents who are living there, who that's where their home is, that's where their life is, what's the big deal? So hopefully, fingers crossed, people will still travel, they'll still pay the money, and the money will go into the ecosystems of Venice and doesn't get swallowed up somewhere else.
Look, if you can afford to travel to Venice, you can afford $5. That's it. That's all I'm saying. So Let's move on to crew questions this week. What's going on with crew questions?
It's actually quite a good one. There's no name on the question, but it's actually a really good question, to be honest with you. But our mystery emailer basically wanted to know what the term skip lagging means in regards to travel. It's a bit long-winded, but I'll try and break it down as best I can. Skip lagging, is the practice of booking an itinerary where the stopover is the actual intended destination of the traveler. So using a point A to point B phrasing, I think that's going to be the best way we can do this. A passenger would book a ticket that takes them from point A to point C with a stopover at point B. Now, the passenger's actual destination is point B and leaves the airport at this layover, leaving their seat empty on the B to C portion of the journey. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess you could say somebody's traveling from, say, London to Barcelona. So they book from London to Barcelona to Palma, and they're not coming to Palma. So what they do is they get off the plane in Barcelona.
Exactly right. Spark, you got it right. Anyway, based on fuel and labor costs alone, a lower fare on a longer journey seems confusing. However, there are a few reasons for this price differential. Air travel is obviously a very competitive business, and specific routes will have more competition than others. Now, if an airline knows it runs one of the few direct services to a city, it will charge as much as customers are willing to pay. Now, however, if an airline has to route customers via a hub stopover, it will often lower its fares to compete with other airlines who are running that direct service. Now, another reason is that an airline might have to pay more in airport fees for passengers disembarking at one destination versus another. Those fees might not necessarily apply to transit passengers. Now, it should not come as a surprise, obviously, that airlines dislike the practice. In essence, they cannot fill a physically empty seat for one flight because an absent skip lagger is supposed to be sitting there. Now, many airline contracts, if you read them, or carriage these days, do expressly forbid the practice of skip lagging. Therefore, the airlines can, and they have, claimed they are just enforcing the fine print if they discover passengers skip lagging and file lawsuits against those passengers. It has been done. They have filed lawsuits. The majority have failed. I'm not going to lie. United Airlines are one. They failed with one. I think Air France did as well. However, even though they failed that, what they then done was they banned passengers from flying on them. It could be from a year's ban or a lifetime ban. They've also stripped people of any membership perks that they had, including frequent flyer miles or lounge access. It's a tricky one because if you actually legally, airlines shouldn't be able to stop people doing it. But the truth is they have tried to seek legal action against people, and they have been known to ban passengers, and they have been known to strip them of their frequent flyer miles. If you've got any ideas, because it's £500 cheaper, is it a risk worth taking? That's got to be up to the crew. I couldn't comment on that.
I would imagine if you're like a deckhand and you're going off to your first job and it's £500 cheaper, or you're going dock walking and it's £500 cheaper, you probably do it because you're 18, 19 years old. You don't have any frequent flyer miles built up. You don't have any special privileges. Maybe your first trip away from home. You just want to get there as quick and cheap as possible. So you do that. Okay. But yeah, it does limit your options, especially if they catch on and you do get a job. And all of a sudden, the only way to get to that job is the airline that you've just been banned from. That could create
a problem. That's the thing, isn't it? Indeed, yeah, it could be short-term gain for long-term pain at the end of the day. It's very risky. If I was booking a flight and somebody told me they're doing that, then I would seriously tell them not to. It's too risky. If they get caught, the penalties can be very severe because the airlines really don't like it. Yeah, really think about what you're doing and what you're going to be saving in the long run. Should you get?
Yeah. Ling, as usual, it's been a very informative session with you.
Always a pleasure, and looking forward to next week.
You've been watching another edition of Crew Travel right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next week.